All right, we're talking tonight about the 90 and 9, which is talked about in Matthew and Luke. We'll start in the book of Matthew, chapter 18, verses 10 through 14. He says in verse 10, "See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I say to you that their angels in heaven continually see the face of my Father who is in heaven. For the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost." What do you think? If any man has 100 sheep, and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go and search for the one that is straying? If it turns out that he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 which have not gone astray. So it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones perish. So, the question is, what's the context? Why? What inspired this this discussion? So, does anybody have a Bible handy? Matthew chapter 18, read verse 1, possibly 2. We can start with verse 1.
"That time the disciples came to Jesus saying, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, never enter the kingdom of heaven."
So that's the context. That's what inspired Christ's discussion of the 90 and 9. There was a question that was asked from his disciples, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? So, again, the disciples are thinking short-term, temporal, right here, right now. How can I get the most influence, the most authority, the most power in this new thing that God is going to do through Christ? They already know they're on the inside circle. But they just want to know, how can I be the best of the best? How can I get the most? So Christ has a very weird answer. He calls a child up to him. He says, unless you become like one of these little ones, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Not be the greatest. You can't even get there from here. Unless you become like one of these little ones. So, how old do you figure that child was?
6 or 12.
6, 7, 10, 12. Somewhere in there, most likely. He called the child up over to him so he could walk. But I think there's a vast difference in that culture and our culture in the way that they approached children. How many remember the phrase being said, children should be seen and not heard? That's gone. But even in the generation before our current generation that was very strict about, you know, the kids at the kids' table, not at the adults' table, you don't interrupt the adult when you're talking. Children, they should be quiet, they shouldn't be interrupted, or all those sorts of things. That doesn't compare to what things were like in Bible times. You didn't become a part of the adult consciousness, except for on the mom's part, until you had bar mitzvahed in the Jewish tradition, until you had become an adult, quote unquote, at the age of around 13. So, in this context, Christ is taking the least great in the context of where they were and who they were talking to. He takes the least important and puts him up on a rock and says, unless you become like this little child, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Not can't be the greatest. So humility is what's being discussed. It's not very humble to say, how can I be the greatest? That's kind of opposite world. Okay, children are trusting and children are vulnerable. And if they're going to make it, they can't get there on their own. A child needs support, needs correction, it needs direction, it needs protection, shelter, all of those things. So Christ is telling his disciples, you can't get into the kingdom of heaven unless you become like this child. So he didn't even answer their question. Their question was, how can I be the greatest? But he said, you can't even get there from here with the way you're thinking. So at the end of that discussion, he says, whoever wants to be greatest in the kingdom of heaven has to be like this child, has to humble himself. So the will of the Father in heaven is that not one of these little ones should perish. The will of the Father is for... And many people have said, now why does it depict Jesus as leaving the 99 like they don't even matter? Like, doesn't he care about the ones that didn't wander off? And I heard it put this way, that if you think about a father waking up in the middle of the night to the smoke alarm going off and the house filled with smoke and the fire in the house, and the father runs to the children's bedrooms and is getting them out of bed and either pushing them out the door or carrying them and getting them all out the door, and he goes outside and starts counting and he's missing one. Do you not think he's going to go back inside to get the one that's not with them? Aren't they going to be in danger? Doesn't he care about the ones that are outside the fire? The cold night air, aren't they going to catch cold? No, he's not worried about them. They're safe. He's worried about the one that is in danger. And that's the point of the parable, is that the one that has wandered away from the fold, the one that is away from the shepherd's care, is in danger. And he wants them to be safe. He wants them to be in the fold. So, there's another context in Luke chapter 15 where Christ tells a very similar parable. Now all the tax collectors and the sinners were coming near him to listen to him. Both the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. So he told them this parable, saying, what man among you, if he has 100 sheep and lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture to go after the one which is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no. So, Christ came to seek and save that which was lost, and that's the context of what he's talking about here. Christ was trying to allow the Pharisees to understand what was truly important in the kingdom, in God's paradigm, in God's economy. God is interested in those who are far from him. He's interested in those who are lost. So if we are thinking like God, we are not okay when people are straying. That's not just, well, that's how they want to do it. Now, I have to admit, it's a lot easier to say, well, have it your way, than to go and to confront, to entice, to persuade, to try and get someone who knows the truth to come back into the fold. The Pharisees, what do we know about them? They have a bit of a trouble with the humility as well. Yeah, they were very interested in being seen as righteous. Not that they were actually righteous, but that they were seen as righteous. That's why Christ said, hey, if you want righteousness and people applaud you for it, you got the reward right there. Rewards are finished. If you get your applause from men instead of from Christ, that's it. And understanding what a parable is, we look at these again as an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. So Christ is telling these parables, these stories, to instruct. It's not just to say, well, here, it's story time. Let me tell you this interesting little story for you to just kind of go to sleep by. No, this is informational. This is supposed to be transformational. You see, we as Christians are supposed to be countercultural. So that the culture, the way the world thinks and works, shouldn't mesh with the way we think and the way we work. Because we are on a different path. We're on a different road. The narrow road is different from the wide road. And we should act differently because we are not of this world. The kingdom, that's what he continues to talk about. The kingdom of heaven is like. The kingdom of heaven is like. That's what these parables are trying to instruct us about, what the kingdom is like. The kingdom is what God is doing in the world and is trying to bring the world to. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him would not perish, but have everlasting life. So there's an eternal kingdom and an earthly kingdom. The kingdom is the spiritual rule over the hearts and lives of those that are submissive to God. That is kingdom living right now. Where we are, who we are, how we think, how we live, that is God's kingdom, the spiritual rule of God in the hearts and lives of his children. Now, the spiritual reign of Christ on earth is called the church. That's what we are. We are the kingdom of heaven on earth. Now, there's going to be a physical reign of Christ on earth one day. That's called the millennium. That is the 1,000-year reign of Christ, where he will rule and reign for 1,000 years before the final battle, before Satan is cast into hell for eternity. So Luke 19:10 gives us the perspective of Christ. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. Very instructive to the parable of the 99. That's his job description. That's why he came here. Not just so that he could be a good example, not just so he could teach good morals, but so that he could seek and save. To seek was all of the preaching that Christ did, all of the miracles that he did. That was drawing people to himself. The saving part was him dying on the cross. When he died on the cross, he made the provision necessary for eternal salvation through the shed blood of Christ on the cross. John 10:1-5 gives us another perspective of Christ as shepherd. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him, the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by his name and leads them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. A stranger, they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. And this is an appeal to what they understood very clearly. A sheepfold in Israel would have been a space that was basically a wall built up with stones, because it's a very rocky area, so there was no shortage of stones. So they would build a enclosure with one entry point. And the shepherd would lay, he would sleep in that entry point. So that nothing came in or out unless the shepherd knew about it. So when Christ said, "I am the door," that's the picture. He is the way into the security of the fold. And it's interesting, when you actually go into the Middle East and you see them shepherding that way, there might be five shepherds with, you know, five different sheep herds in that fold. And that shepherd, when they get ready to go, he'll call his sheep. We were talking about the other day, I was going to visit LD and talking about all the different cow calls that there are. I know what Wayne's is, and LD showed me what his was, and I just think it'd be a neat research project to go around the countryside and say, well, how do you call your cows? And it's a lot the same way with sheep. When the shepherd calls his sheep, they know his voice. And only his sheep come out of the fold. All the rest of them stay. Now, that doesn't happen by accident, does it? You don't brand a sheep or put a clip in his ear and they follow you because you did that. What do the sheep know about the shepherd? I need to stay with him, because when I'm with him, I'm fed, I'm protected, I'm at peace. I don't have to fend for myself. I don't have to worry about stuff around me, because he's going to protect me.
I saw a thing, and I was like, I don't think it was a guy talking to me. I don't think zebras really mind if things take them in, because they don't have to worry about lions, and they can actually sleep.
So are we like the sheep in relation to Christ? Are we close enough to him that we know his voice? Can he instruct us and call us and we follow him? Or does he have to go out into the desert to try and find us as we've wandered away again?